Welcome to Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now, here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond just talking about Christianity to truly living it. But you know, the difference between our understanding and our actions can be very great sometimes. That especially when our understanding is skewed. That is, when we don't know how to act because we're a little bit confused. The Christian message, it was great 2,000 years ago, but is it really relevant today to our culture, to our lives? That is what we have as a focus today with Bobby Conway. Bobby has podcast and a website around this theme of the one-minute apologist. He loves to grapple with these issues. And so, Bobby, we thank you for being with us now on this interview to help us grapple together with what is called apologetics, that is, really understanding the faith and its relevance for today.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be on with you.
Yeah. So do you think, let me just put it to you this way, is the faith of Christianity just as relevant today as it was in the day that Christ walked the earth?
If it's true, yes. And we both believe it is true. And that's why as Christians, we need to continue spreading the gospel message that Jesus established in the first century with his coming. And when the Spirit of God came to empower the church, they were demonstrating through their life and even through their martyrdom what we are supposed to carry on, even today in our culture, believing as we live out a salt and light message that Jesus Christ is the hope of the world. And while it may seem irrelevant to some, we have a big responsibility as Christians to show that the questions that Jesus answered, how do I deal with my guilt? What's the purpose of life? What happens to me when I die? Does life have any meaning? All of these questions are still relevant today, and the answer is found in Jesus Christ.
What do you do with a question like, come on now, Bobby, I don't believe there's a supernatural world out there. Science has shown us otherwise. Tell me why you believe there is another world beyond this one.
Well, on one level, I believe in a supernatural world because I've experienced God. Now, that could be very subjective to the atheist, and I'm sympathetic to that. So I believe, as a believer, by faith, this isn't a blind faith. This is faith that, like, confidence in the evidence that I believe is there. But because I believe that God has done a work in me and I've experienced him. Yet, outside of that, I also am encouraged when I do Christian apologetics that I believe it makes more sense, even if I take my Christian hat off and speak to an atheist, it makes more sense to me that there is a creator God. And we go to some of the philosophical arguments, like the cosmological argument that every effect has a cause, or we go to the teleological argument that everything that's been designed has a designer. And even this moral argument that internally we sense universally this common ethic. Yes, it's nuanced, but by and large, we have this common denominator that it's wrong to rape somebody, or it's wrong to go and just kill someone for fun, or it's wrong to steal. So we believe these things, and why do we have that? I believe all of this points to God, and not only that, for me, it takes a lot more faith to believe that nothing took nothing and made something than to believe that something and someone took nothing and made something and someone's, namely humans. So for me as a Christian, I, like my friend Frank Turek and Norman Geiser say, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist.
So let's take, you mentioned three things, the cosmological argument, the teleological, and then the argument based on morals. Let's start with the last, because you started to unpack that first. The idea that there's right and wrong, you're suggesting, is somehow evidence or at least a strong clue that there must be a God. What then do you say to the person who believes morality has just evolved along with religion, along with animals and humans. Not, I don't want you to get into evolution right now, but the evolution of ethics. That Bobby, basically, some would say that we have right and wrong because we've learned that's what helps us to live better as human beings. Don't tell me this is evidence somehow that there might be a God. How do you respond?
Yeah, and you know, you'll have different reasons that people will give for morality. Like, you know, it was built in through the survival of the fittest, and we were, you know, utilizing morality to help us survive because we knew if we did action X, it could destroy us. So we avoided action X. So morality was sort of this this tool that was helpful for us. Others will say it's an illusion. Others will say it's as a result of social conditioning. Some will say it's a result of education. And, you know, there is some truth to some of those things from the standpoint that we are shaped by our education and we are shaped by our cultures. But what I'm getting at is there such a thing as objective right and wrong? And if God doesn't exist, I would say, no, there is no such thing as objective right and wrong. But if he does exist, then what I would contend is there is an objective right and wrong. But because of our fallen natures, we will get skewed with that. Because we are spiritually blinded, we won't always see it. But I know in my own life, Bill, I can remember before I ever even heard the gospel as a teenager, I felt this sense of guilt. And I was confessing sins to the unknown God that I didn't know. And later, when I would place my faith in Jesus Christ and then read in Romans 2 that God built his moral law within us, that was incredibly confirming for me to realize, wow. See, here's the question. Why does an atheist even feel guilt if there's no such thing as objective wrong? If it's only subjective, then all we have to do is tell ourselves it's only subjective, this guilt. Don't worry about it. But one of the reasons there's so many people in psych wards today is because they went crazy as a result of covering their secrets due to their guilt.
And the great news of the gospel, that means good news in the Bible, is that our God is a forgiving God. And that's a message we need so desperately today. Bobby, thank you for personalizing this. We can be all philosophical and theological. We can sound real bright and brilliant, but the world doesn't care. What they care about is that we personally can say, this is what happened to me. And this is what can happen to you. Let's get real. We do have a conscience. And if there are people who live without it, they're seen as the aberrant part of society. We call them sociopaths. We don't condone that. Why don't we? Why doesn't the atheist condone a sociopath? Because there is a moral right and wrong that transcends our society. C.S. Lewis, I think, in his Mere Christianity, that's a book I recommend. Is there any book you recommend on this topic? And then we'll go on to the next.
Well, I do think that C.S. Lewis's work is really great there. As it relates to the moral argument, the kind of primary person for the one who kickstarted that is Immanuel Kant. And what's funny about Kant is he rejected some of the other arguments for the existence of God, but he did hold to this. And then C.S. Lewis is the one who really popularized it in a way that we could put our hands around, and he gave great illustrative material to it. A person who's done some good work on the moral argument is William Lane Craig. Mm-hmm. People could look at his website, reasonablefaith.org, and just type in the search engine stuff on the moral argument. He also has a nice video that was put together that animates the moral argument as well as some of the different arguments that I think could be helpful for our audience to learn more.
So you mentioned also the teleological argument. I know the Greek word teleo speaks of a goal or an end purpose. What's that argument say in general?
Well, basically, the teleological argument, it's an argument that we utilize to help an atheist understand our rational reasons for believing in God. Now, none of these arguments get you to Christianity. Hmm. What they do is you're utilizing philosophy to argue that it makes sense, it's plausible to believe from a rational standpoint that there is a God that exists. So theists could be the Jew, the Muslim, or the Christian could utilize some of these arguments. And then when it comes to arguing for Christianity, you would get into other things like the resurrection of Jesus Christ or the reliability of the New Testament or why you believe miracles are possible. But the teleological argument is arguing from design to a designer. And what's amazing is we see like in Psalm 19 or we see in, you know, Romans 1 that, you know, that it's obvious that when you look out as Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare the glory of God. Well, we think about the psalmist recognizing that there's something that beckons our attention to think beyond the universe to a universe maker. And we think about those observations and how commonsensical it was before the age of science. And now we know with, you know, the Hubble telescope and the expansion of the universe, and we know with, you know, just the, our ability to look into the DNA, and we see how intricate that is and the coding that's involved there. And we think about just the unbelievable design that science has shown us, and we think about fine-tuning. And all of this begins to, you know, it looks pretty suspicious that we aren't here by accident, and that there's a creator, there's a designer that outfitted us, that made us. And so that's what we want to show. And I think that it's a strong case for us to make to those who are skeptical, to let them know anyway that we're not like these people just believing in a Santa Claus because we believe in God. I mean, look at the universe. This was designed. Every piece of artwork has an artist. Every composition has a composer. Every car has, you know, a mechanic that made it. And so, too, the universe had a universe maker.
If I had to recommend a book on this topic, I would think maybe of some of John Lennox's books, like God's Undertaker. Mm-hmm. He argues that if you look, for example, as a mathematician and a scientist, he looks at the mathematical probability of the human genome, of all these genes in our bodies actually occurring, if there were simply evolution, if there were not a God guiding a process of our creation. And he says it's statistically absolutely impossible. And you just can't get around that. So there it is. What would you recommend someone read if they want to go further on this teleological perspective?
Well, I think that Dembski has done some great stuff as it relates to this. Stephen Meyer, in his book Signature in the Cell, Dembski's Mere Creation or Intelligent Design, even an older book by Behe, Darwin's Black Box. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting stuff that they have. And not only that, at reasonablefaith.org, there's also a nice video featured there on the teleological argument as well, and including one on the cosmological argument.
Can I say, and you may comment on this, Bobby, but if someone gets serious and starts reading and they come up with a man like Richard Dawkins, and Richard kind of scoffs at, for example, the teleological argument, and he uses very strong rhetoric and persuasive arguments to an extent to try to denigrate and even mock these perspectives. And you can read it and think, well, that one's shot through full of holes until you pull back, read all the viewpoints, and then use your brain a little bit, and you realize his stuff is very, very weak, but he can fool you. And I'm not trying to make him sound like a dummy. I believe Richard Dawkins and other new atheists are incredibly intelligent people. I love them. I want the best for them. But we have got to be wary. We've got to be aware of those who are very intelligent, but who are not giving us the whole truth. Can you comment on this danger?
I do think it's important. I think that Christians need to learn the art of discernment. We need to understand our theology. We need to have our own worldview in place. And I think that when we are reading different books and stuff, we need to refuse to panic. And, you know, that is something that can happen to us. I know for me, even I do Christian apologetics, and sometimes I'll read something and, man, it can put those seeds of doubt. And I start to panic a little bit and feel anxious. And, you know, The problem that the atheist has is the same problem that I have. Doubt is not a Christian problem. It's a human problem.
Yes.
And
yes.
In the absentee of certainty, there's always going to be room for doubt. And so one thing we need to do is we need to realize that even the atheists have their own set of questions. They don't have everything in a bag, and they can't put their atheism in a tight little box, though they would have us believe that. They can't give a definition of really what even energy is at the true heart of it. So when it comes to dealing with somebody like Dawkins, I don't think that a Christian, that's their starting place to read Dawkins. I think Dawkins, he's not a trained philosopher. He will get himself in some difficulties there. And so I think it's important for people to take their time when they read a book, not to panic, to look at all the different views. You know, when I first started studying and getting discipled, I felt like my goal was that I had to read and figure out what my position is on everything, you know, and get kind of my God in the box. And, you know, apologetics has its limits. Apologetics can be helpful for erasing some doubt. It can answer some questions. It can show us that we have a reasonable faith. But at the end of the day, if we use apologetics because we're looking for certainty, we're going to end up with disillusionment. We're going to become very anxious people. We're going to be closet doubters, and we are going to entertain apostasy. And what we need to do is we need to remember that true sanctification is just realizing what happened in justification. And there's just something about my own journey, Bill. When I slip into a doubt fest or when I get off track, there's just something about the fact that I often complicate my walk with God, and he just invites me back to the basics of pursuing him through prayer, of giving my life away through sharing the gospel, of dying to myself and getting back into the Word and not studying it just from a pure scientific standpoint, but to devotionally discover Jesus Christ.
If you're just joining us, we have with us as our guest, Bobby Conway. He has a website called The 1 Minute Apologist, and he's got some books out. We interviewed him some time ago around his newer book, The Fifth Gospel. He's got a book coming out this September. Bobby, what's coming out in September?
It's called Doubting Toward Faith. And what I'm doing in this book is our culture, we're living in a melting pot culture of doubt. And what's happened is with the rise of technology, with the world moving next door to us, with the new atheism and their campaigns, with over 40,000 denominations, we are experiencing what one atheist, namely Jennifer Hecht, referred to as cosmopolitan doubt. This is when my belief bumps up against somebody else's belief, and then we wonder, well, how can I know that my belief is true? And we are in a confused state right now in our nation. We are no longer what we once were. We're not really sure what we are yet. And in that process between what we were and what we're becoming, there is a pandemic of confusion, which is creating doubt in our culture. And I'm addressing the doubts that people are experiencing. And I even write very vulnerably about my own doubts. And I don't celebrate doubt in this book, but doubt means to be in two minds. You can doubt toward unbelief or you can doubt toward faith. And this is a book designed to help people to doubt toward faith.
Bobby, I thank you that you've been so transparent as to admit that you have doubts at times, but your book is surely showing what the title suggests, that doubts are actually not something to be embarrassed about. They are something we all experience, and they're the very building blocks to a stronger faith. So how exciting, to admit that, you know, our minds can't figure God out. You can't prove or disprove God with a test tube, nor can you reason him into existence. There's something deeper needed, and that is to take the reality of our doubts, to test them against all options, and to come up with what is the most reasonable solution or the most credible deduction based on everything around us. But there's more, isn't there, Bobby? There's the heart. There's the revelation of God. There are the experiences of our lives. And when you put it all together, you've got a very strong package suggesting, yes, you can believe in God.
Yeah, it's a cumulative case that we're looking at, that, you know, you've got you know, circumstances and experiences and answers to prayer and New Testament evidence and miracles being possible and then philosophical evidence and scientific evidence. It's just wrapping all that up. But the church needs to do a better job of saying it's okay for you to doubt. People are going to doubt anyway. So what I contend is we might as well help people to doubt out loud so we can help them to doubt toward faith. Now, Jesus can discern the difference between skeptical doubt and sincere doubt, antagonistic doubt and authentic doubt. Some people, they want to doubt so that they can move beyond their faith, but others want to doubt out loud so that they can have their faith strengthened. And I think in the church, we just need to do a better job. The church, unfortunately, what happens to Bill, you know, we get into this thing called Christianity by admitting we're sinners, and then we believe and we hear, yeah, all you got to do is believe. And depending on what church you become a member of, then they'll hand you a long list of doctrines. Mm-hmm. And that doctrinal list can put somebody in a tight box. And what happens is it can inhibit true thinking. If somebody gets into a church and the box and the list is so long and the box is so tight, if that person is strong-willed, analytical, or creative thinker, he's going to feel like he's doing something wrong, but all they're doing is they're just thinking. And so what I believe is we should have a big box for people to think in, but we need borders. We don't want to be heretics. We don't want to go off the deep end. At the same token, we need to know how we can concede with one another when it comes to things like the return of Christ. Let's agree he's coming again, but boy, let's realize there's lots of options. And I think if we can tell our kids that, like I tell my kids, you're going to hear all kinds of options. I don't want you to panic when you learn and when you study. Your job's not to read a book and then come down on a position. Enjoy learning. Know that there's lots out there. And I'm telling them that because I'm being preemptive that if I try to put them in, you know, their Young Earth box, their King James Only Verse box, their pre-trib box, their this box, well, I might have just set them up for a future doubt crisis.
Mm. And a crisis, while it can be good, it can lead us to Christ. If, as you said, if we're doubting away from faith, if we're actually, we've got a heart issue and we don't want to believe because we would prefer our lifestyle over what God calls us to live, that kind of thing, it can go the wrong way. So talk to me about this. We don't have much time. We could go into the cosmological argument, but I really think people are enjoying what we're talking about here. We're getting real about doubt, about faith, about how we grow. Talk to me about this then, Bobby. How much of what we believe is actually a heart issue?
Well, when it does come to our belief, I think there's different things that are going on. I talk about these four shades of doubt. And so you can have, you know, volitional doubt. And I think sometimes, you know, we battle God. It's a battle of the will. And then it could be something that we want, and that becomes a heart issue because we're not willing to submit to him. We don't want to walk his way. We don't believe he has what's best in store for us. And I think that one shade of that doubt, that volitional side, can really mess us up. And I think that we end up in our life struggling with certain habitual sins that blind us to God. I think that we struggle submitting to God. Deep down, we want to go our own way. And yeah, there is a lot of stuff. I think it's a holistic approach, though. If I'm counseling somebody, I want to know, you know, how's their heart with God, but I also want to know how their thoughts are and how their emotions are, how their diet is, and how they're eating. There's so many things that really affect our well-being and that can even skew our view of God.
Well stated. We look holistically at our lives to have a holistic view of the world and of the God who made it. We have time for one final thought. You've got this website called The 1 Minute Apologist, and anyone can Google your name, Bobby Conway, 1 Minute Apologist, and there find all kinds of short YouTube videos on the topics we've just started to address here in this short program. If you had to pick any one that you wish people would see, what would that be?
Wow, now that's a big question right there. Well, I guess what I would want them to do, since I can't think of anyone in particular, I would want them to do exactly what you said, to check out these videos, to just type in Bobby Conway in their YouTube search engine. We have over 750 videos. I would love for them to check it out. They're short, they're creative. I interview world-leading experts in apologetics and philosophy, and I answer a lot of these myself. And like I said a moment ago, how we don't want to be overly dogmatic on certain things. We don't want to be overly dogmatic on being an old earth person or NIV person only or whatever that is, or KJV only. We try to be broad in what we're dealing with, but at the same token, conserving true theological orthodox doctrine.
Thank you for being with us, Bobby, and every blessing on your ministry as a pastor, as an apologist, as a voice in our culture.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for the opportunity to be on with you today, bud.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. And if you'd like to help support this ministry, or if you would like to know more about Beyond Words, visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com.